Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast, the official cannabis podcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Oh, first things first, everybody. We have another new way you can help us out. We want to improve the show, so we have a survey going. Please, everyone who's listening, if you want to help out GrowCast, give some feedback to the show and get more specific information on what you guys want to learn about and what you guys want to hear on the show. Just go to growcastpodcast.com and click the survey button at the top right. It's right up there. Just growcastpodcast.com. Click the survey button. It takes about a minute to fill out, and we can improve this show and continue to bring you the content that you love. Wolfman is on the line. What's up, Wolfie?
Oh, not much, man. Just hanging out.
Nice, nice. Thank you for taking the time to do this.
Oh, yeah. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. couldn't think of anything better I'd want to do today.
What are you smoking on? What are you doing out there, down there in California?
I just got some concentrates. I couldn't tell you what it was. Just got a big blob from a buddy.
I like that. Big blob, mystery blob.
Yeah.
It's like the mystery flavor.
It does the job.
Yeah, yeah, buddy. I've been into these live resin cartridges, though.
Oh, dude, live resin's awesome.
I didn't know they had the liquid stuff going for the C cells or whatever they're called, the little cartridges. And big fan.
C cells are awesome. I'm a big fan of the C cell battery as well.
So been smoking this live resin, got the dispensary prices though going. Oh my God, man. Moved out here to Portland, paying these dispensary prices is killing me. Maybe there's a fan out there who wants to reach out. There's a contact form on that website. dude, these dispensary prices are killing me, and I can only imagine how it is down in California. I'm up here in Oregon, and we have one of the lowest tax rates of any of the states.
Right on.
So that's awesome. How much does a gram cartridge cost in California? It's got to be $60 or more, right?
Oh yeah, all depending on what you're getting, I'd say an easy $50 to $60, sometimes more.
Yeah, here it's $45 or $50 for a cartridge, or like $60 for really specialty stuff.
Right.
I'm paying.
I got a buddy that was making cartridges, and he sold me for like half price. So I was getting grams for like $30.
That's legit.
$25, $30.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they were tasty.
Yeah, tasty's what's up. And I especially like the live resin because it burns a little slower. I feel like I can blast through some of the distillate.
Right. Yeah, I can see that.
Suck those things down in like 28 hours.
Right. Yeah. Different high a little bit too.
Yeah, totally. Totally. What are we talking about today? Just a grow chat. Got a bunch of stuff. Just stuff going down the list. Some things I've encountered. And talking to Wolfman, tapping into his deep fountain of knowledge. Let's start here by, this should probably go on a listener question episode, but that's okay. Someone wrote me and they said, hey, I'm growing auto flower, and I'm growing organic. And he said that he was looking for some top dressing. He wanted to amend his soil. The vibe I was getting off of him is he wanted to, boost his plant a little bit. He was an organic grower.
Doing the no-till, just doing the dry farming.
Totally.
Not necessarily dry farm, but yeah, no-till, doesn't want to, just maybe tease, maybe just water, that kind of thing. That's a good way to do it.
That is a good way to do it. Maybe the listener or any listener is not happy with their growth, or maybe not happy with their yield with their organic. And it was clear that he wanted a boost, and he was asking for a dry amend. So let me just kind of go down the line of this whole exchange we had. First of all, auto flowers are probably the number one requested topic on this show. I've reached out to like four or five different breeders. Some people have followed up, but everything has fallen through. I can't find an auto flower expert who can make it happen and come on my show. So I am working on that, listeners, and I apologize for not knowing more about auto flowers. I don't know if they require a different nutrient regimen. My understanding is that the word on the street or whatever is that they tend to be a little less potent, and they tend to not yield as much. But Wolfman, what do you know about auto flowers? They're so popular with these home growers worldwide. I never encountered them at all in California.
It's nothing I ever really ever played with or even
encountered.
To play with.
Yeah, totally. Like it's just not part of the culture on the West Coast, but around the world they love it.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I can see it. You know, you just get some seeds and you just pop them and you just go, and you can't really, there's really no taking cuts of auto flowers because they just, once they get so big, they just do their thing. It's just not anything that really, really was sustainable in a, like a larger scale production aspect.
Right.
But,
I would like to learn more just for the sake of learning the science. Maybe a listener can reach out if you know someone who's an expert. And Wolfman, now that you're in on this this little predicament that I've been wrestling with on this show, maybe you can keep your wolf ears out and see if you can pick someone up for me.
I'll talk to some people when I talk to the
Right. So I said, you know, autoflower, I'm not an expert. I basically apologized. And then I said, you know, if you're looking to boost your plants, like I kind of think you are, consider watering through with some organic liquid nutrients. He said he wanted something dry, but I said, what's wrong with, throwing in some Herculean Harvest into an organic super soil? That's not going to mess anything up. Right, Wolfman? What do you think about that?
I mean, if you're going to want to add like bone meal, I'd probably go with a not a liquid version. If you're going to do like a dry, like an amended soil type of thing.
But no, he's already planted. It's a top dressing. That was the whole thing. He's already going.
Gotcha. Yeah. No, I mean, in that respect, yeah. I mean, watering in some, you know, some bone meal or there's different companies make organic boosts. Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to tell him to top dress and then not get the effects he's looking for. So maybe he could water through with an organic liquid nutrient. That was my first suggestion.
Yeah. No, you can always hit him with a little bit of an organic kick. Some people that I know that do like organic baselines, sometimes I'll throw a little bit of a synthetic kick just to give him that little bit more of a boost.
Mm-hmm. That can mess with the biology, but you've shown me some hybrid growers that are like really good. There's a couple Instagram growers I follow that are hybrid and it works. So I don't know. It's a delicate balance, I guess, right?
What do you mean hybrid? Like they do some organic and some synthetics?
Yes.
I mean, that's what a lot of people do. I mean, like, I think it's kind of, you know, you're getting the best of both. Like I had a buddy back in the day, he would do he would amend his soil, just it'd be new soil. And then he would throw in some, you know, more like the bloom phase nutrients, like mixed in the soil. And then he would just water, occasionally just do a little bit of like an enzyme or some kind of tea. But then just to give him a kick, if he didn't see the growth he really wanted, he'd throw in some maxi powder in flour or something like that.
And that's what I saw is that when they entered a certain stage, like the bulking phase, they hit it with some synthetics and then they go back to building the biology.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I knew a dude who did BioBiz as his nutrient line, but then just in his, you know, his flour kick, he would use like Moab or something like that. And they would just, you know, the taste and the visuals and everything aroma was amazing. Mm-hmm. And realistically, I mean, no one would ever know that it had a little bit of a synthetic boost to it.
Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with that line. Moab, it's a line?
No, Moab is it's mother of all blooms. It's just a 0-50-30 product from Mad Farmer.
Right.
Or a 250-something. They all kind of change their numbers.
Retail
expert. Their numbers every so often. Yeah.
So that was my first suggestion. And then I was like, but if you do want to do the dry amending and want to go that route, you know, who popped into my head was, Patrick Smith, one of the first guests on Growcast, organic growing expert, cannabis cup winning grower for his organic, strain. He has a whole line of soil and tea, and he was like trying to get his website figured out and shit. And it was like kind of janky and it was up and down. He got that shit figured out now. You can get it on Amazon, okay? The company is called Green Bicycles, but it's spelled G-R-E-A-N, Bicycles. And he has two products. One is his soil, his super soil, essentially. And I think it's actually an amendment. It's a soil amendment, so you don't need to order a shitload of it. That's what this guy wants. It's highly scientifically formulated. Brian Emerson came on my show with Patrick Smith. Well, you know, Brian Emerson, you know how good that grower is, right, Wolfman? And Patrick's the one who taught him all about organic growing. Nice. This guy's fucking legit. So check that out, Green Bicycles, for any flower amendment. And then his other product is called Bounty, Ocean Bounty or something like that. And it's a tea. It's a tea mix. I'm pretty sure. I don't know if it requires bubbling or whatever, but it's a tea mix and it's just fucking booster. Bio booster for your plants. So look into Patrick Smith, look into Green Bicycles, and definitely right up the alley for anyone looking for something like that. I went to rip a pen.
Right.
I was hoping you'd pitch in. Are you familiar with Creed?
Yeah, no, I remember when he was getting his start. I was working at a retail spot where he first started. We started selling the stuff. His tea was pretty good. I never tried any of his stuff. There was a good following, and like my guru that taught me some stuff. He was a big advocate for the products. At the time I was doing more of just doing lines. I think I was running like heavy 16 or I think I was in my heavy 16 days at that time. Mm-hmm. So I like that line. I'll do a line for a while and I'll tweak with it, or I'll do like a cutting edge with some additives and mix and match and takes pieces from different lines based on quality or price point or result of said product.
Yeah, and that's what's fun. Yeah. Basically that's how you grew me up, man, is basically what you were saying. Cutting edge for most of my grow career was my baseline, and I picked and choose. And also that's when it's really fun, when you build your own nutrient line. You say, you know what, this product is cheap, but I feel like it does as good a job as the expensive products, so I'm going to use this. And then that's kind of the fun part of growing, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, it all depends on the style of growing you're doing. If it's something that you need to like maximize, or if it's just a little hobby, you can play around. But I'd always tell people, treat it like an experiment. If you're going to try something new, try one new thing, and keep a journal, get a calendar, make notes, I saw this kind of growth. I saw this kind of growth. I saw, this burn, like these right. leaves twisted like this, da, 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 da. Notes are good if you're learning and you're gonna try something new.
Yeah. So, do you have any recommendations? Any organic amendments pop into mind? Any particular brands? The one thing that I did leave them off on also is maybe for next run, Kiss Organics, Keep It Simple Organics. They have something called water only soil. It's exactly what it sounds like. Has everything you need for the whole run. I don't know how good it would be for an amendment, but that is my other suggestion. But what about you, Wolfman? What are your thoughts for this organic grower who's already going, who wants a boost?
If you're already going, pretty much depends on, what markets you're in, what part of the country or state. Different people are going to have access to different nutrient lines a little bit easier than others, and there's going to be price point issues, things like that. Mm-hmm. I know that, Roots Organic came out with a newer top dress organic product. There's a veg and a bloom formula called like Turp Tea that came out last year. That's pretty good. Nice. I haven't tried it yet.
Specifically designed for top dressing. That's cool.
Yeah. You can either mix it in or top dress, and they give you all the instructions on the back. But pretty well, a lot of guys are doing that. Depending on what like level of mix you want to do. If you just want to do like a top dress amendment, I know Botanicare used to have one called Growilla. I think they quit making that one a couple of years ago. Then there was Mighty Grow, which was a chicken poop mix, so you get mm-hmm. a little bit of chicken fertilizer or chicken poo in there, and a bunch of other goodies. So it just all depends. Like, there are a bunch of different top dress mixes out there. If you're starting fresh, or you want to like know what to add, that kind of thing, I am a big advocate of getting a soil test if you're reusing your soil, if it's a large application. But if you're just starting from scratch, you're buying a new bag of soil, I would be, depending on what kind of soil you're using, I would be a little hesitant to start packing tons and tons of stuff into your soil that's going to be a high or a quick breakdown. Mm-hmm. If it's a slow time release kind of thing, I think you're okay. Mm-hmm. But most soils out there, if it's a pre-charged soil, you're going to get two to three weeks of feed out of that soil. If it's like an ocean forest or a vermifier or a Roots Organic, that kind of thing, you're gonna have a good amount of pre-charged nutrient already in there, depending on the plant's porosity, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
But yeah, I know a lot of people are making really good stuff. But yeah, Mr. B's, Green Grow.
I was thinking of something, Wolfman. The importance of a clean space, cleanliness.
Cleanliness, yeah.
Cleanliness. It's so key. Yeah. First of all, basically just any plant matter you know, is the enemy. You got the dried leaves that are falling off, withered leaves, if you're not taking care of your shit, right? And they start to to wither and fall to the ground. Maybe you, maybe you're the type of the grower who has the motivation to clean those up, but you just put them in a bag and stick them in the corner of the grow room. You know what I mean?
Right. Or even just pick a bunch of fresh green leaves off, like you're pruning, and then put those in a bag in a corner. So, that's just going to create rot and mold and funk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And attract pests as well, right?
Depending. Yeah. That could definitely attract pests. Yeah.
And it's really easy to let that stuff happen. It gets out of hand quickly and you get dirt all over the floor, right? You get dirt up in the air, get dirt on your buds. Nothing like finding like a piece of perlite in a bud. I got to get my shit together.
Right. Yeah. And then, yeah, if you, you know, if you're sloppy with like a molasses baseline, or just if you're using molasses, you get that all over, you're going to bring in ants, and then eventually the ants are going to get into your soil, and then you're going to bring in aphids, and that could add a whole nother realm of problems. So,
oh my God.
It's good to be clean.
Do you clean between every run? Or, I mean, that's pretty diligent to clean your whole room between every run. I do a sweep. I like the power wash, but I don't get crazy and wash the walls or anything unless I have broad mites or some sort of outbreak. How often do you clean and how do you clean?
I mean, I would definitely, you know, like I used to bleach wash my tables, and then I stopped doing that because I don't like using bleach. So then I do hydrogen peroxide or vinegar. What I had around, but I clean, you know, always clean my reservoir. Eventually my drip system became like PVC, and I would, you know, clean that out. Sometimes I'd bust out the like big pipe cleaner and just get it good and clean. All depending on how funky things were.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely, you know, if you're doing, like air cooled lights, you definitely want to clean that glass every time. You know, if you're foliar feeding, that's just going to create dust or mist, and that's just going to burn on or stick to the glass and make it less less light penetration, that kind of thing. It's a little darker. But yeah, I would definitely clean the walls. I definitely would, like, wipe down the walls if I could. Sweep up, vacuum up, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And that's a good point. When the bulbs get hit with, you know, if you got some fine dust, if you got some really dry ProMix and it gets in the air, it'll settle on the bulbs. You know, if you have open hoods or, like you said, the glass on some different light hoods and stuff. And also any sort of oil from, if you're spraying with an atomizer and you've got, you know, the neem oil going or anything weird and sticky like that, that'll settle on those bulbs and cause all sorts of problems, not just with light penetration, like you said, but, those will heat up eventually and explode. Yes. That's what I've heard. I mean, I've heard that if you get an oil spot or too much on the bulb itself, the danger that you're running is that those areas collect heat and then the bulb will crack or even blow up. Is that true?
I mean, I mean, anything can happen. That's why, most, applications for bulbs, they should be in an enclosed setup. Like when you go to a Costco or something, you look up and you see those huge metal halides, they're in an enclosed fixtures,
right?
Just in case of that. But metal halides tend to explode more than HPSs. HPSs should just crack.
Oh, interesting. But,
I have seen them like completely, you know, like crack off the bottom of the bulb, but it all depends, you know. You never want to like spray water at a bulb, that kind of thing. There was this fisherman I met years and years ago. They would, when they were night fishing, they would say, I think they're at 1,000 watts they'd stick the bulb underneath the water. As long as the socket was like watertight, you can turn the bulb on underneath the water. And as long as you weren't putting like a hot bulb into the water, it wouldn't crack, and it would just attract all the fish, and you just easily like catch them with a net. It's kind of a cheater thing. It was like, you know, fishing with a grenade, but. teach his own. I don't think it was all that cool. Whatever.
Yeah. So I was told not to even handle the bulbs too much with your bare greasy hands and to wipe them down carefully whenever possible. I had open hoods with my HPSs, so that wasn't a big deal for me.
Yeah. No, I knew, I think there was companies that would, give you a sock that would fit over the bulbs. So like a lot of people I knew when they would like would clean their rooms, or I would always, or most of my buddies and I would try to use like a bomb in between runs just to make sure everything was clean. You put a sock over the bulb if it's in an open hood, that way you're
funk. Or maybe if you're atomizing, throw some socks over that.
Or just, you know, not spray your bulb. But yeah, no, atomizers go everywhere. So you definitely want
to. Accidents happen. Be good. You know,
accidents do happen. Yeah.
People make mistakes.
We all are human.
But yeah, the bomb between the runs is good too, I feel.
Yeah, it's just preventatives, you know. I mean, even if you have something going on or not, you know, if you're on it and you do everything the same every time, you shouldn't have issues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And keeping up those fan blades too.
Especially
if you have some sort of pest or contaminant or something. Those fan blades are a sneaky little gathering space. And it must be the suction, you know, like the pressure, because they get covered in dirt after a while. So you got to imagine they must be covered in all the other stuff, you know, whether it's broad mites or powdery mildew.
Yeah. And then also, depending on the quality of the fan itself, the fan blades, they will start to cup and they will stop. They will stop pushing as much air.
Right.
I know that was an issue that I had with a certain brand of fan, or certain size and brand of fan.
That's the danger. I see that they become too cupped or too flat. Either way, I guess it just doesn't push the air the
same way. Yeah, I think they would either. Yeah, because eventually you'd feel more air coming off the top of it versus straight forward.
Oh, wow.
The front of the fan.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So I think they were decupping. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, just thin. It was a 16 inch. They're just big, thin blades that eventually they decup them or convex themselves.
They fucked them up, man. And that's the kind of stuff you don't really think about.
And then also sulfur. If you're someone that tends to burn sulfur will break down plastics and stuff. So if you've got panda film on your walls, sulfur will start breaking down the molecular structure of your panda film, so it won't be as light reflective. And then also microscopically, you'll have crystalline mm-hmm. Sulfur structures over the surfaces for bugs to hide in.
Whoa.
So you're just creating extra little spaces for bugs.
That is fascinating. Talk to me about sulfur burning. Have you found that to be effective? Are those results impactful?
I mean, sulfur, at least in California, burning sulfur is one of the things that you can do it. You can't do it. You can do it. They take, they pull it on and off the lists.
Oh, really?
At least like back in the day, you can, you know, when you could sell it, when you couldn't sell it, that kind of thing. It's hard to get prills. It's not hard to get prills. Sulfur is pretty dangerous. You do run the risk if you're, lights kick back on when the room is full of sulfur vapor, you'll just burn everything. It's very phototoxic. You don't want to breathe it in.
Yeah.
You definitely want to have, timers on fans and all that stuff and lights and whatnot. I recently learned that if you burn it in your greenhouse, that is going to degrade the, your film, you know, your clear plastic a little bit quicker. I would spray a liquid sulfur on my plants before I would burn. But people burn things or use bombs because it's going to cover everything.
It's all encompassing. Yeah.
It's all encompassing, but two, you know, people are lazy, that kind of thing. But I also like spray for the same reasons, because I feel that I know I'm going to hit every last little bit of that plant versus bombing. But, you know, you're not going to get all the little nooks and crannies. That's why I like to bomb the room for, you know, cleanliness in between. But I'll try to maintain my my sprays on my plants for cleanliness for my plants and preventatives that way.
Yes. Yeah, I like that. It's good stuff, man. Never had to deal with tables and stuff like that, but yeah, fascinating stuff. Moving on, though.
Well, I mean,
go ahead.
I mean, you could get to pots and saucers. Realistically, you know, you shouldn't have like nasty, funky, moldy leaves in your saucers and whatnot. And,
yeah,
you know, salt buildup on your pots. I know people will clean those. I used to wash my smart pots every couple runs and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yes, moving on.
I wanted to bring up something that I talked about on the last episode, I think it was the last episode that aired, regardless. So interesting, the extract market and the distillate market. And now we're entering this weird phase of kind of moving away from potency, because you can go get, you know, THC diamonds now. And they're not like a huge hit. You would expect them to be some sort of massive hit, right? 99% THC, or, you know, it's basically 100% THC. People are more into
What do you mean by diamond? I don't know that term.
Yeah, man, look it up. Diamonds. It's essentially the separated THC. You should check it out. You've seen them. So, they're known as a bunch of different stuff. You've seen them around. It's also known as separate. Crystalline, THC crystalline.
Right. Yep. Yes. I understand. Just a term I was familiar with. Sorry to interrupt. Continue.
Isolate as well. People are more interested in, like you were saying earlier, like, you want the tasty stuff, man. You want that. People are into the full spectrum extract and all that stuff. And then this term live resin came around. So now people are doing these extracts before the plant is dried. Now there are growers who are growing just so they can run their whole crop, whether it's live resin or whatever. And it completely changes everything. You know, as this grower said on the last episode, you're not going for, quote, dry bud weight. That's a term that didn't exist before, because you would never grow for anything else, you know?
Yeah. That's it concentrates. I mean, the way I see it, because I mean, you know, BHO extraction has been around for, you know, 100 years. Like, we used to call it honeycomb or honey oil back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I feel it's like a cooler, there's finally a hip way to smoke stuff, and it's more accepted, and the technology and the pens and dab rigs and all that stuff has kind of come full circle.
Yes. And also the internet showed us all that that's possible. I think people who were smoking BHO were like, you know, it's like Trailer Park Boys. It's like these, like, you know, like people in Canada, one remote part. I would have never found out about it before the internet, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, it is a lot cleaner these days. There's a lot more refinement going on, that kind of thing. I knew some guys back in the day. They had one of their fields. They just called it the oil field. Some outdoor growers, and like, they weren't growing that field, that crop, or that field to harvest and have dry weight. They were just growing that field to blast, because they had a better market for, they had a better concentrate market than a flower market.
It's just so interesting, and it's such a brand new emerging market. And it was cool because this grower was talking about, you know, you'll do stuff different. You might do a smaller pot, so there will be more resin production, less focus on growth. Then you can pack them in more. You might grow them more vertically. He talked about moving the lights, lower temperatures. The rules have changed. You know what I mean? This is like, also, you got to imagine that you'd save some time cutting out the drying process entirely, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's just a whole different option. Yeah. A whole different thing. You don't have to worry about, but in that same instance, you have to have a much larger, like, refrigeration area, or a big, like, walk-in freezer. Cause
good
if you're gonna, depending on the scale of things you're doing. And a lot of these times when you're, you know, going for your concentrates, you're, you know, looking at 4%, a 8% return, a 10% return on, you know, your investment. Mm-hmm. So it's a very, you're new, the numbers are a lot smaller. You just have to have a lot more input materials to get your final product. So it's, you know, if you don't have a trim room, you might have a big ass refrigeration room. So it's a give and take.
That's a good point. It's just the distribution that everyone struggles with so much. And that's why people love this extract, is the distribution's much easier, or at least it was, especially a couple years back.
I mean,
it's a less flooded market, man. You got to admit there was so much bud. If you had concentrate, you had an easier time letting go of it.
Yes and no. It's also a different, it was, and it could also possibly still be a different realm and a more, stronger consequences if you're caught, if you're in that black market.
No, true. That's true.
You know, it's a manufactured product versus a natural product.
Yep.
So, you know, it's, you know, there's a higher, it all depends on
what's it like in California now. Is it illegal to produce it in your backyard?
I am not completely up to
speed. I'm not sure either. I need to have
whatnot, but I know there's, I mean, I think it still comes down to the county and what they want to do. But if you're doing concentrates, I'm pretty sure you have to have permits if you want to do it legitimately. I would imagine they're still going to still keep busting people and like forcing everyone to go, you know, as legit as they can. It all depends. I know that certain counties only give away certain permits, and some counties are completely against it, or some counties say they're all for it, and then, you know, they make you jump through all these hoops and spend thousands upon thousands of dollars, and then, you know, a month later, like, oh no, we changed our mind. You have 24 hours to vacate the premises.
That's brutal. That's fucking brutal. Yeah.
So, I still kind of feel California has at least another year or so to really shake out and figure itself out. But I don't know. I think we'll see we should see a normalization within the next year or so. Cause I mean, you know, like at least the big boys can probably take a couple seasons off or, you know, figure something out, but eventually people are going to June or July is going to get here and we're going to need to, people are going to start putting plants in the ground again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talk to me about what's going on in the retail world. Like you said, people are getting ready to ramp up for the next season. What's going on? Yeah. How are sales? What's selling? What do you see?
It all depends. It's California is still pretty slow just because, you know, legalization, you know, it put everybody got a little hesitant. But I mean, you know, I kind of feel that, you know, if you still have a decent customer base, it's going to be springtime. I mean, in the cannabis world or not, you know, it's springtime is going to be upon us in the next couple months. So, propagation stuff, seedling trays, rooting cues, rooting hormones, mm-hmm. Grow nutrient, all that stuff, depending on how wet your area is, like, you know, some people are starting to bring in soil, that kind of thing. But you know, again, the winter time, the off season, you used to be a big indoor market. A lot of people would go inside for the winter and grow outside for the summer. So it all depends on where you're at. City kids are still going to be more indoor growers than outdoor growers. So,
right.
Yeah. Just spring, getting ready for that mindset moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some amendments.
What happened with those wildfires? Because everyone knows about the wildfires in LA, but before that, they're you know, up in Northern California by Santa Rosa and up by Garber, you know, Garberville, and up in the mountains. There's a lot of growers up there. What happened with the market? What happened with those farms? Did some people lose their entire farms?
I'm not 100% on all of that. I know that that's the Redding area with the Paradise or the campfire, the Paradise fire. That was pretty gnarly.
Yeah.
I know there, a lot of people probably did lose their stuff. Smoke is never good for any crops, anyone in general. I know that, you know, I'm in the San Francisco area and we had horrible air quality. Like I tried not to go outside if I could help it.
Wow.
It ended up, if you were in that area, I highly recommend if you haven't, check the cabin filter in your car, the air filter in your car. Most modern or newer cars will have a filter for the cabin air.
Right.
And definitely want to change that because it was pretty nasty. Mine was like almost black.
Oh my God.
You know, changed it like 3 months before that happened. So, just like the one in your house, you want to be able to breathe better.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, especially in that enclosed space. If anyone has any stories about that wildfire or anything cannabis related, send it in. I'd love to learn more about that. It's intense stuff. It's just really interesting how the market shifts, how it changes. You know, everyone was growing outdoors, and then as you put it, there was the big camp push, the big attack on cannabis growing. So everyone moved indoors and then everyone moved outdoors again. But then there's wildfires. So the price goes up because the supply is down. It's just so fascinating because it's a high value commodity market, but it's also farming. So you know what I mean? That's a crazy combination. No other product, no other industry is like that at all.
I think we've got a few more years of black market before it really changes.
We'll see, man. We'll see what they do with taxes, because it's alive and well in the states where the taxes are so high. Even Colorado, taxes are really high there. At least last I checked, things could have changed, but.
Yeah. I think in what, California's like 30 to 50% tax or some ridiculous amount.
Yeah, double Oregon.
Yeah, everybody's got their hand out. They just want like, ooh, give me money. It's like.
That's so stupid though, because it's short-sighted. Because they don't understand that if you tax it too high, no one's going to buy it legally. They literally can't wrap their head around that.
Yeah, people just see money. Gimme, gimme, gimme. It's the way things are moving.
But it's brutal because they don't want money. They're like so short-sighted that they're leaving money on the table. You know, it's a combination of greed and like lack of logic. Fucking lack of logic. Use your head. you know?
Yep. They're, you know, yeah, they're, with their pick, they're stepping over a dollar to pick up a nickel. Yeah, whatever totally. That saying is.
Exactly right, dude. Fucking you nailed it.
But yeah, that's a much deeper conversation for a different podcast.
Yeah, for sure. That was good, man. I love talking to you because we go on tangents and that's what people love. So yeah, I feel like that's a good place to wrap it up, everybody. Wolfman, thank you for taking the time to do this.
Oh, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
All you listeners out there, share the show with a friend. We really love when you do that. You can give us a rating and review on iTunes or a different podcast app if you're not listening through iTunes. And remember to take the survey, growcastpodcast.com. Click on the survey button. And we look forward to hearing from you guys and improving this show. One more time. Thanks, Wolfman. I look forward to seeing you soon, buddy.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait to give you a big hug.
All right. Yeah, me too, man. All right, everybody out there. Wolfman, Jordan River, we're signing off and we're saying,
stay safe out there, people.
And grow smart. And definitely right up the alley for anyone looking for something like that. I went to rip a pen.
Right.
I was hoping you'd pitch in. Are you familiar with?